Being a ministry wife is a role without a job description. And let's be honest, sometimes it seems like ministry might be easier if we did have one. If you are a ministry wife and are looking for hope, perspective, and a little bit of practical advice regarding your role, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Christine Hoover, and I also am a pastor's wife. And I want to welcome you to the Ministry Wives Podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. Join me as we hear from women in various ministry contexts. We're having authentic conversations about our shared joys and challenges, even the ones we're unsure we can talk about out loud. No topic is off limits. Today, my guest is Paige Weezer. Paige is a Texas girl who has lived in the Pacific Northwest for 21 years and counting. Paige and her husband believe in winning college students to Jesus will win the world and change the next generation, one that their three kids are a part of as well. Paige joins me to talk today about traps the ministry wife must avoid. So here, friends, is my conversation with Paige Weezer. Welcome, Paige, to the podcast. I'm so glad to have you.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. Oh, I heard the East Texas accent right when you said that.
It comes out. It does. I can't get rid of it. I've been gone 22 years from Texas, but I still say y'all.
Yeah. Well, we were talking before we were recording. We're both from East Texas. And every once in a while, my accent will come out, but not a lot.
Yeah.
But I heard it.
People ask me periodically where I'm from. And I try to say Washington, and they're like, no.
You're not. Yeah. So now tell us where you live now.
Mm-hmm. We live, my husband and three kids and I live in Eastern Washington, Pullman, Washington, home of Washington State University Cougars. Go Cougars. There we go.
How did you end up from Texas to Washington?
Yeah. Back a long time ago now, my husband and I, well, at the time, my significant friend and I were getting to know each other, trying to figure out our future. And we had a moment, we are both involved in collegiate ministry in college, and we had a moment in different states and different experiences with the Lord. And God really revealed that we're to get married, which at that point was like, whoa, huge. And then we're to move out of the Bible Belt, work with college students, and be a part of a church that's really different. And that's kind of the beginning of it all. So we moved right after we got married to the Northwest.
And been there ever since.
Yeah, we have. That was in the year 2000, so that's a long time ago now.
And what do you mean by a church that's different?
Well, actually, Christine, at the moment, we didn't know what that meant, but that's pretty much morphed over the last, 18 years. And we didn't know what that would look like at the time. But as we continued to ask the Lord where we would be, where he wanted us to plug in, where we'd be used, it was starting churches with college students on college campuses.
Yeah, which I want to talk about, but I first want to talk about the context of the region you're in, the Pacific Northwest, which we kind of have an idea if we live in the States of what that is. But for somebody who's living there, can you describe the context, the political, cultural, spiritual context, what the worldview is of people who live around you?
Yeah, sure. First, I'll say it's beautiful here. Everyone come visit. I think I'll use it like by calling a gal Northwest Nancy. We'll call her Northwest Nancy. She has no absolute truth. She has no authoritative truth. So if you and I were to invite her to a Bible study, it would be like someone coming to me who loves Jesus and asking me to go study the Quran. It might be it's not something that would give me authority in my life. It's not a truth. So she would be very tolerant of what I believe. And she won't tell me that I'm wrong, but she's suspicious. So Northwest Nancy also has grown up in the Northwest and it's a post-Christian culture. Except for the crazy part about the Northwest is we never really went through a Christian culture, but we're at the spot of post-Christian culture. If you look into that, like the kind of the definition or the culture of that is where we are. Nancy has never had a church experience, most likely, except what she's seen on media or TV, news, those kind of things, but not usually a firsthand personal account of anything church or Christian experience. A lot of Northwesterners keep to themselves, they also need relationship, but they keep to themselves and they're a little suspicious. And Christine, I think Northwest Nancy is becoming North American Nancy as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is the future of our entire country.
Yeah, yeah.
So what would you say to other ministry wives who maybe they're preparing to move to the Pacific Northwest to plant? What do they need to know or be prepared with or for?
That's a good question. Northwest Nancy is still looking for a relationship, and she still wants community, and she still wants purpose. It's just in my experience, and I haven't lived in the South in a long time, but in my experience, the on-ramp to relationship is longer in the Northwest. It takes more time for someone to go from suspicious to curious, if that makes sense. There's still the element of being sensitive, of course, to where Jesus is softening people's hearts. We pray all the time for leaders and wisdom and people of peace. And when you listen to the Holy Spirit and you get to know people, you see that. God provides those moments of softening hearts. And usually it just takes a little bit longer than you anticipate it will as far as relationship.
Mm-hmm. Have y'all always lived in Pullman since you moved?
The first 4 years we lived in the Portland-Vancouver area. Doing college ministry on a campus there, and then moved to where we are now in 2004.
Okay.
Started our church in 2007.
Now, y'all are planting with a very specific model in mind in the structure of the church. Can you describe what y'all are doing?
Sure. Note, you just said y'all. I love it.
I
feel like we're back in East Texas. Yeah, we're reaching college students. We start collegiate churches on college campuses. We're in 15 campuses now across the Northwest and beyond. And Christine, really, if you think of the August, September, about 6 weeks in that time, millions of college freshmen are moving to campuses and they're moving away from home. They're entering into an experience of some kind that will transform their life, that'll lead them into their future trajectories. And, you know, if you think about it, job, possible spouse or friend group, those things. And what if these millions of students inserted Jesus into their life and that would change their trajectory and change their decisions and transform their hearts to make different choices maybe than they came into college with, or at least a gospel idea. And then they go on to lead our country and they're in influential seats of all kinds across the country in leadership. So that drives us, the freshmen. We say often, you win the freshmen, you win the world.
Mm.
Yeah. So they're coming to campuses all over and we want to meet them when they do.
Mm-hmm. So you moved to Pullman and you started this church specifically trying to reach students at the University of, is it Washington? University of Washington?
Washington State University.
I'm sorry, Washington State.
That's a little like A&M and UT, UW.
I'm sorry. Okay.
No, Washington, we love both. We love both.
Yeah. So you specifically start this church trying to reach students. Now, my first thought is that's hard. One, because you don't have more seasoned believers. You don't have stability. They're going to come in. They're going to go out. And the financial piece of how do we sustain a church on college students. So can you speak to that?
Oh, yeah, that's a lot of good questions, too. The financial piece, we are always, in a sense, a mission church. I don't just mean on mission, but I mean we have develop partnerships. And in addition to our 120-something staff, raising their own support is how we fund our people on staff. So that's kind of how we do it, I guess. We have just a story real quick that we had a gal, I guess it was almost 5 years ago now, walking across one of our campuses. It was actually in Western Idaho. And someone walked up to her and said, "Hey, you want to come to church?" And she had never been to a church, never thought about going to a church. But again, college freshman, interested to meet and have new experiences. She says, yes. She arrives and she's about 30 minutes early, which, what does she do for 30 minutes? So she starts helping set up just as you would for a mobile church. So she is helping set up for a church that she's never been to and doesn't know anything about. Here's the gospel and gives her life to Jesus. And 4 years ago, moved with one of our church plants to Montana to be a part of a church planting team. And Christine, that's what happens over and over. And that's how God continues to provide leaders. You're right. They're not seasoned, but they're discipled and
teachable.
They're young and they're ready. Yeah. To go.
Yeah. I'd love to hear more, another story or two about how God has transformed college students.
Yeah. A story that is a theme when I was thinking through this, a very common theme. Each week we have a video staff meeting with 120 of us. And often there is student A came to our small group. We call them villages, and they're not really that small. They're usually 20 or 30 people, and came and knew that we were going to have food and talk about spiritual things. And so they came and they got to know some other students. And again, college students, just like most of us, or just like all of us, are looking for purpose and community.
Yeah.
And they're trying to find it anywhere and everywhere they can, good and hard, right? And so come along, be a part of a group, listen to people who have purpose and hope in their life and give their life to Jesus. And it's consistent that that is what happens. And so I had mentioned earlier that the ramp is long for relationship with a typical Northwesterner, but it's a slightly bit different with a college student because they're new at a place and they're looking for a place to connect and belong and friends. And so we actually have that story. Thank you, Lord, a lot of people coming and being a part of something. And as I was thinking through what would I want to know as a mom, I have two teenagers and a 10-year-old. As a mom, having grown up with a very healthy church in the South and knowing that coming into this, there's not a program for kids. There's not, it's not exactly like what I experienced growing up, you know?
Yeah.
But my kids, we make a big deal, as it should be, at a baptism services, and we usually do them all at once. And, you know, we've had up to 20 at a time be baptized, but they share their story of intersecting and learning and meeting Jesus and who's discipling them and those kind of things. And my kids from a very early age heard some things that I sometimes wasn't ready to define for them, but needed to define for them. But my kids have sat under hundreds of students and people be baptized and hearing people say, Jesus is better. This happened to me, or I chose this, but Jesus is better. And so my kids have learned life changed through seeing, if you will, the cool college student become a Jesus follower. And sometimes that speaks, you know, pretty loud to these young kids.
That's amazing.
I'm raising. And
so how do you incorporate adults? Are adults joining? Are they seeing what's happening? And they're like, hey, I want to be a part of this.
Yeah, at different sites, we also have a community service. So we meet on campus initially. If you know anything about college system, if you're a club on campus, you can get free space on campus to reserve. And some of our sites have a community service as well, which means meeting off campus. Oftentimes, it is college students who have grown up to a certain extent, you know, the last 4 to 6 years in our church, and they continue as young professionals, young families into our church. It is sometimes a unique person who will join having not had any experience in college, but because of our direction, our focus towards college students. But when they do join, when they are, let's say there's families that we've had families with teenagers come and be a part, of course, and they have a heart for college students as well. So it's a little bit different.
I love it.
Entry.
So y'all are in Pullman, and then how does this become a multiplication thing? Where is Resonate the name of the umbrella, like, I don't know
our
what
network,
you would call
yeah.
it. Network. Mm-hmm. Network.
Yeah.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How did Pullman become 15?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of prayer and sweat and tears. No, it's been an adventure. We went through a season of having a goal of planting 21 churches by the year 2021. We really just created the Lord through us created a culture of we send out a church plant, that plant plants a church plant in 3 years. And so that, you know, can really multiply pretty quickly over the course of time. And we continue to send groups and church plant teams to college campuses each year. So
do you have your sights set on any other college campuses that you're not yet there?
Oh, yeah. There's a great list on a tear sheets on some walls at the office that talk about that, or there have been. This year, we're planting at Colorado State at the end of this year. So that's
awesome.
Our next one. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. I mean, so is the plan to take over the world or what?
Well, there's a strategic list of 400 some odd college campuses that we look through and pray through. And each spring break, we send our college student spring break, we send it actually covers about 3 weeks because of our different states that we're in, of college students going on scout trips with current leaders and potential church plant leaders of teams. And they go scout trips, prayer walk, meet people. So I know the one from my town went and visited four or five schools in California last month. So we'll see.
Wow. Exciting. I love it. So is your husband leading the whole, is he overseeing all of Resonate?
Mm-hmm. He's the lead pastor, and so he leads our church planters. We call them site pastors, and I get the joy of leading our site pastor wives, our church planter wives in our network, yeah.
That's amazing. Okay, well, I want to switch gears to that because you do have years of experience. You guys are in a catalytic church planting movement, and so we have a lot we can learn from you. So I would love to talk about just being a ministry wife and what would you say are some of the traps in the heart of a ministry wife that we can fall into over the course of ministry?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one of them, Christine, is when you begin to see the church plant as taking from you. You calculate how long your husband's gone, how much you or he may miss something with your kids in school. You have to rely on your community to take or pick up. Someone's late again for dinner or what, you know, you can start be, I think, Satan wants to get that root in and begin a root of bitterness that just says, oh, this is taking so much from me. And that can be emotional. It can be time, spiritual, but I would say like, we should not be surprised or caught off guard because church planting is actually a giving endeavor. When you start seeing it as a taking endeavor, there's a lot of pitfalls and traps that come from that in my own experience and time of, you know, especially when I had very young babies, there's a different kind of parenting that needs to happen when you have very young babies and it was emotionally and physically, spiritually draining. And it's not going to be fair who puts in time here or there. And I fell into that trap of everything is taking from me. It's all taking. Thankfully, the Lord in his grace helped me realize this is a giving endeavor and I should not be surprised. A lot of times, Christine, I think the word balance, I kind of hate it. Yeah. Because I don't believe that that's the goal. The hours and the time are never going to be equal if you say off and on or, yeah, if you're searching for balance or desiring balance. Now, I'm a firm believer that getting away, having time together, we applaud that when our church planters and their spouses get away. I think that's necessary and vital. But I would say integration over balance. When Keith and I were young, we'd sit down for dinner and I think, let's talk about something other than ministry. But ministry is our life and life is ministry. And so we realize maybe there's a pause to strategy talk. But if ministry is my life and life is ministry, it's perpetually a giving endeavor. And so that, I think that's one of the traps, mm-hmm. that we can see it as taking instead of giving.
Can I stop you right there and just ask?
Yeah, sure. Because
you said that you saw that in your own life. So mm-hmm. what did God teach you? I mean, you described that you realized it was a giving endeavor, but what did he teach you in that? Was there a truth that kind of stuck out to you that helped you make that switch?
Some of it, Christine, came about by my dear friends praying for me, for sure. I would say the switch, it wasn't just like all of a sudden one day. It was over the course of time. We planted our church and we had a baby, our second baby, the same year. And even though I tell my ladies not to do that, some of them do it, have a baby and a church in the same year. For us, it was difficult and it was hard. And so for me, God really, in his grace, like I mentioned, began teaching me about just the giving part of it. It's not going to be equal. I'm kind of a justice girl, but it's not going to be equal. And the time is not always going to, you know, be balanced out. But what God taught me is to want to live my life in a giving posture, not just what am I getting out of it? And mm-hmm. I think that's human for us to kind of look for that or want that. But that's not God in me wanting that.
I often have to remind myself that Paul said, Jesus said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Mm. And so Jesus is saying, it's going to go better for you. It's going to be more satisfying for you if you, as you said, have the giving posture rather than the who's doing what for me or what can I take. So what other traps? What other traps do you think we need to be aware of?
Yeah. Another one that I've seen in my own life is thinking the phrase, it's his thing, meaning my husband's. And I believe, and we even within Resonate say the first year, this isn't for everybody, but this is specific to us. The first year, church planter wife will also not have a full-time job. I believe getting on the same page, being a part of missions endeavor together is a together thing. And eventually, my life doesn't look exactly like, of course, my husband's on a daily basis. And it has looked different in different seasons. But for the trap of, oh, this is just his thing, that to me has distanced myself from the mission. That to me has distanced myself even from being a giving, having a giving posture. And I think that that is a sneaky trap because, yes, it's his job, but it's also our life. And I do think that is different in ministry than it is in other things. And it's unique. I talk a lot about that idea with my ladies as well, my church planter wives too.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you're in an interesting spot because you're doing a lot with church planting, but yet you guys are in an established church. Correct. So are there specific things that you are finding have been potential traps in an established church context?
That's good. I think one of the other things I thought through was this season will never end, or this will never change. It'll always be this way. Can't we sometimes be dramatic, us girls? This will always be like this. I'm never going to see the end of it. But Christine, like, there will be hard. I think that pain comes with purpose, and it'll be hard moments, but they won't last forever. And through the last, you know, since 2007, when we started Resonate, there have been some really hard moments. And in the midst of it, I felt like the trap of this will never change. It's always going to feel this way. It's always going to hurt this bad. I mean, even if you take the last 2 years, it's been hard. But that's not the truth. Like, God, there is joy in the morning. And sometimes the morning comes a lot later than you want it to, at least in my heart and how I feel. But I think the idea, whether you're established or beginning, that, oh, this is hard, this will never change. I had someone ask me once, remember back in, you know, this 1 year that was hard, does it still hurt as much? And I was like, no. And that was an encouragement that what's hard right now isn't going to hurt as much in the future either. Mm-hmm. That the seasons do change.
Mm-hmm. Are there any more traps that you want to share with us?
Yeah, I was thinking through another one, and it seems kind of trite maybe to say expectation, but unmet expectation. I know when we said yes to church planting, we had no idea what it would look like, you know, this amount of years later. And some of that was really fearful for me. And God did some work in me for sure to say yes to something that wasn't like, oh, this is exactly what you do and when you do it and what it'll look like in 3 years or whatever. But that it probably won't look exactly like what you said yes to, because we work with people and people are messy, but we also change. And anyhow, and so I think just that it feels like it could be a trap in any part of life, maybe, but unmet expectations lead to comparison and just realizing it's not going to look exactly like you thought it would in every single detail. And that's okay.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you've said that relationships are really a key to the vitality of your ministry. And I'd love to know what are some essential relationships that you encourage your ministry wives in your network to cultivate?
Yeah. We use the up in and out idea of relationships. And in that, up is relationship with God, in is community, other believers, and out is mission. But I think to make it specific to a church planter wife, let's use up in and out too, in a little different way. So up being a relationship with a lady who's ahead of me that pulls me up in wisdom. I have a very close relationship with someone who lives in my town now, but hasn't always lived in my town for the past 12 years or so. But she is ahead of me in ministry. She's ahead of me in experience. She's ahead of me spiritually. And I think we need someone like that to pull us up in wisdom. And that, when I first say that to our ladies, sometimes it feels very hard to find that. But within our network with church planting and even across America, there are some fabulous ladies that we could just say, hey, could I talk to you for once a month for 6 months, you know, or something like that. And sometimes there's, you know, you have to be a little awkward and put yourself out there, but it's so worth it to have that person that's up, that's ahead of you a bit. And then secondly, I'd say an in-person, someone who is alongside you in the mission daily and locally. This person, you may not be able to share all the things that are hard within leadership or ministry, but it's someone who's side by side, who you could call in the middle of the night if a kid was sick, or someone who gets it and walks alongside you and is a very dear, present friend. that I've had that in some points, and some points I haven't. Each of these I've had in some points, and some points I haven't. The goal would be all three at the same time, right?
Yeah.
So up, in, and then the last one would be out. Someone I think that's not local and not in my church, that's not frustrated or doesn't benefit by your leadership decisions. They're just a neutral person that you can call and talk to, FaceTime, meet together periodically, that you can connect with, to have people that you can share and can say, have brutal honesty back to you. Like, oh, you're seeing that in the most negative, or, oh, you're seeing that in a way that I don't believe is in line with what I know you to believe, or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So up, in, and out, those relationships.
That's really good. So tell us about this network that now you've created. You have people who've come through your church, and these students become leaders, and then they go out and become pastors, and they have spouses and all of that. How are you seeking to invest in, for you specifically, the spouses, the wives?
Yeah, we have a pretty intentional process of discipleship that kind of takes someone from freshman in college through to a church planting team. And there's off and on ramps to that throughout. Are you going to be a leader of leaders, a leader of followers? But all can be a part of a church plant team in some form or fashion, whether you move to the city and get a job and you're a core team member, you move as a staff. But what I personally get to do, and it's my joy, is to connect with our site pastor wives, our church planting wives, on a monthly basis in several different ways. But I get to provide care and connection between them, and teach some competencies and leading them, and some basic things of, well, your house is going to be used a lot, hospitality, or your mission is life. Life is mission. So just helping them understand some of those competencies, yeah, and walking alongside them and things that I've experienced, and even that they've experienced and can share with each other
too. Yeah, that's great. What do you need? I'm just thinking about people listening. I mean, what's happening where y'all are is just incredible. God's blessing it. What do you need in terms of prayer, in terms of people, in terms of money? How can we participate from afar in what you're doing?
Well, we wouldn't say no to money, that's for sure. Church planting does cost money, I think I mentioned earlier, but Keith and I, anytime I drive through a college campus, and specifically in my town, because I drive through it more often, but anytime I'm in another town and drive through, or I'm on campus, my prayer is for leaders, for people of peace, and for wisdom. And I would welcome that prayer for myself and my husband and our staff, for leaders, people of peace, because the people of peace are the ones who are out there that we may or may have not met yet, but can also be gatekeepers to other students and people who don't yet know Jesus, wisdom to lead. I don't ever want to step into my own wisdom in leading this. Believe me, my faith was small, and I would never have gotten to where we are without the Lord leading us in this and doing it, for sure. Yeah, so those would be some things that I would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's encouraging to hear what he's doing there, and we're thankful for you and your faithful service in his name. And I hope that people listening will take up the call to just say, once they finish this podcast, say a prayer for you and your husband. What is your husband's name?
Keith.
Keith. So Paige, mm-hmm, and Keith, we can pray for you. Thanks for joining me, Paige.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, and thanks for inviting us.
Thanks so much for listening to the Ministry Wives podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. If you found this content helpful, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your podcast platform, or share it with a friend. You can find this podcast and other helpful resources at ministrywivespodcast.com.
I'm Trevin Wax, and I have a new podcast called Reconstructing Faith. In it, we address the church's credibility crisis, reflecting on the challenges of today while learning from church history and the church around the world. Look for it wherever you get your podcasts.